So I know this was a so-called negative topic this week, just like the failure modes was. But again, you have to recognize the theme is a 100% refusal to accept personal responsibility for the outcome. Making excuses is a matter of shifting responsibility to someone else when it really relies on you. You own that. But you don't want to own it. You want to shift it to someone else. You're trying to get something for nothing, and the universe doesn't work that way. When you make excuses like this, for the most part, you're trying to defend your ego, which needs constant defense against any enemies, foreign, domestic, any perceived slight, any possibility that you're less than perfect, because otherwise that little voice you had to that little critical voice, you're a loser. You're never going to be nothing. Maybe your dad, you know, yelled at you when you were a kid. You're a loser. You're weak. And so that's what you feel like when, you know, so you have to shift the blame to someone else so you don't have to accept responsibility. It means you don't have to have that little critical voice. That's nothing more than your ego trying to defend itself. If you had no ego, the little voice wouldn't have a place to hang on to. It would just go away because you would have nothing left to defend. You would just be there and you would just accomplish your mission. These are ego defenses. Otherwise, you would say, look, there's no leads. I understand that. That's the job I took. If I did have leads, there are some people I'm probably going to sell, some aren't, but it's not the leads. It's the leads are just raw data. These are people all interested in products, all I need to know. The price is too high. Good. I'm glad the price is high. It means I'm going to make a lot of money when I sell this. It means I'm going to be working for a company that's profitable and doesn't lower their price to the point where nobody makes any money. And besides, it's not too high. You have to establish value. Prospects are always busy, especially the ones that are worth getting to, and they have gatekeepers for that reason, so I don't have any problem with that. My message is worth hearing, and they'll recognize that. I have a good approach, and their time spent with me is really well invested, and they're going to realize that when I call. The economy is neither bad nor good. The economy now is more regional. Some areas are worse than others. Some are bad. Some segments of the economy are up. Some segments are down. There is no one economy anyway. That doesn't mean anything anymore. It's too diverse, too complicated to say that. That kind of a blatant statement means nothing. That's like taking a median home price as $250,000. What does that mean? Nothing. If you're living in Charleston, South Carolina, does that mean anything to you? What neighborhood? What type of house? How big? I mean, that number is completely meaningless. You have North Dakota's homes in there. You want to live in North Dakota? Well, that'd be one of you then, because I think everybody else left. A number is completely meaningless. Product features, whatever. I mean, you know, extra features you don't need. Big companies versus less well-known companies. So what? Training, that's not a problem. My manager, I can care less. The company, whatever. I mean, all these are all nonsense. They don't mean anything. A closer would look at this list and say, this is all a bunch of crap. I'm going to get back on the phone. When someone generates excuses, either they like to whine and complain. They just got into this habit. Everything's bad. Everything's screwed up. Everything, they're cynical. Or they're protecting their ego. Or they're just basically lazy, but they don't want to admit it, so they want to, you know, use excuses instead. They don't want to put forth the effort. They might not have been given the proper training and tools. That is a point, though. For a lot of products, if you don't really have someone to craft a really well thought out psychological engineered sales process and really helps you master it, you would be at a huge disadvantage because some products are very, very challenging to sell in the marketplace unless you have something like that. And if you're not given that, then maybe the bar literally is too high for you. Unless you're one of those people who can walk in and find it on your own. And there are people like that. What you want to do, you want to displace the excuses by disowning it. You don't want to own that excuse anymore. If you've been using some excuse and you know it's just some excuse, you know it's not defining your situation or your results, it's just easier to come up with that excuse than it is to do something about it. The first step is to say, look, what would happen if I continue to use this excuse? Not enough leads. versus just picking up the phone and doing some prospecting and generate some leads. If I sit there and whine about no leads, I'm not going to make any money. If I get on the phone and generate my own leads, I'm not going to be relying on other people anymore. I own my own destiny in sales. So first off, you have to disown excuse or objection. And like I say, all these become internalized. What will happen is if you start saying these things, your subconscious will believe you. Subconscious mind does not understand false, true and false. It's more intuitive. So if you just keep saying, oh, our price is too high, some guy told you once, well, your price is pretty high, you know, there's other people out there I can talk to, you know, charge less than you guys. So what? You know, what are they comparing against? What do they have? I mean, are they selling the same quality and the same product? There's cars that are cheaper than other cars. You can buy a car for $10,000, or you could buy a BMW or a Mercedes for hundreds of thousands. Does that mean that the Mercedes and the BMW wasn't worth more money? That people aren't buying them? They buy them out and they sell out. They're selling as many as they can build at those really, really so-called high prices because people value that. The insidious part is that you internalize that and you own it. Once you accept that, then you bought your own objection. Now, inside, you're thinking your price is too high. So when you state your price to someone, you're always hedging and, you know, hesitating. And, you know, they sense that. They go, wow, this guy doesn't believe his own price. Unless you say it with a big smile on your face, your eyes wide open, and very loudly, your price is, you know, you're hedging, they're going to think, well, the price is too high. And what's the next thing they're going to say? Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if I want to do it. I'll have to think about this, which means they're not going to do it. I want to think about it means they're going away. They're not coming back. Okay? That's how that works. You internalize this and you own it now. How do you get that back out of there again? How do you disown that internalized objection? It's almost like cognitive therapy again. What you have to do is, okay, why am I under the impression that the price is too high? List all the different competitors, list what they have, and you'll see prices typically higher and lower in yours. Always someone lower, usually always someone higher. What exactly are they selling? What quality level or quantity or whatever else? What value are they actually delivering for that money? Is the competition really a factor anyway? Is the prospect going to know about all these so-called competitors? Are they all actively seeking out the same prospect at the same time? If so, how come the prospect hasn't already bought? In most cases, there may be companies out there, but no one knows about them. There's just, the marketplace is too big. There's too big a variety of different types of products and services. They may never have even considered this type of product before. And basically what usually happens, 80% of the time, if not more, is when a viable prospect meets a closer, a sale is made. And not until then. I've been to lots of prospects where they were demoed by this guy and that guy. I go, well, why didn't you buy it? Well, I said, well, let me show you this, okay? And the next thing you know, he's signing a check. Because I was a closer and the other guy wasn't. He was an order taker. So you have to reframe that. You have to understand that you internalize this, that somehow you bought it. And that really what you need to do is establish more value and show how, what will this product do for someone. Don't compare your product price against another product price. Compare your product price against the value you're delivering. What will this do for your business? It'll be worth millions of dollars and only cost $50,000. As opposed to, well, ours is $50,000, that's $48,000. So I should lower my price? I don't think so. So that was an illustration of what you can do is you have to go step by step through these. And you have to see, did I internalize these? Are prospects really too busy and don't ever take salespeople's phone calls? Or are they just too busy and won't take your phone call? That's a big difference. They're always too busy and they never take any phone calls. A guy's probably on the phone all day long. Who's he talking to? They will take phone calls when they perceive the value they can gain from that call exceeds the value of that time used in other ways. So it's your job right off the bat to be, you know, create the value. And if you're perceived as a telemarketer, then almost right off the bat they don't want to talk to you. If you're not perceived as a telemarketer, then what are you offering? What's the upside? You lead in with something like this. The reason I'm calling is I had an opportunity to work with a software company that was in the architectural area, and they were doing quite a bit of exports, not realizing they qualified for a tax credit for that. We were able to secure them $1.2 million. Needless to say, they were extremely happy. Based on that, I was doing some research when I came across your company, and I understand that you're doing CAD-CAM software, not architectural, but I was hoping that I might be able to do the same for you, and that's the reason I'm calling, is I want to find out if there's a possibility we can realize that type of a gain for your business. All right, so I didn't talk about me. I talked about them indirectly via a story. And I talked about my $1.2 million possible payoff, but I'm not trying to push them because I'm not a salesperson. I'm just calling to find out, doing some research, find out if this might be applicable to their company. And then if it is, we'll talk about our service. If it's not applicable, like how big of the company, have you taken the tax credits before, I have to ask them some questions. Like a doctor, I'm not going to sit there. You walk into the room, I say, well, here's your prescription. What do you mean prescription? Well, this is what you're going to need. Aren't you going to examine me first? Well, I do this all day long. I at this point, I use astrology. I noticed from your chart that you're a Sagittarius. All Sagittariuses need Valium, okay, and Wellbutrin. There you go. And I'm going to throw an antibiotic in there, too, in case you ever get something you need. You already have that. You're all set. Thank you very much. You going to go back to that doctor? So I don't know. Why should I be talking about the product unless I talk about their situation first? Now, based on that conversation, is the prospect too busy for my call, yes or no? So what I'd like to do at this point is open this up for any additional comment.
Well, one other excuse that I think tends to come up a little bit more today is the dog ate my cell phone, the cat pissed on my laptop. Technology issues.
Okay, well, hey, everybody's, can fall victim to things that break. I was just staring at my phone, wondering if it was working. That stuff happens, okay? Your responsibility is this. If you're going to make $10,000 or whatever on a sale and you let a $100 phone stop getting your way, then you're an idiot. Let's face it, if you need to run a cable modem phone, voice over IP as one phone, and then run another fixed landline in your house, right, separate circuit, and then have yourself a cell phone, and then have another cell phone. That puts you four separate, with a separate company, by the way, one AT&T, one Verizon, say. Because that's what I actually have right now. I have all of the above. My phones work. I have two phones. One's charging. Well, if this one goes dead right now, I pick up the other one. Because when I bought this Panasonic phone, it came with two handsets and two chargers. So I'm not going to worry about the thing charging. It's only $100-something, so if the batteries go weak, I replace it. I'll throw the damn phone out. All right? So if you have internet access, here's what I have. I have internet access through a satellite dish, but I also have a dial-up modem. So as long as my landline works, I can dial up right into my email and everything else. It's just a little slower. But, I used to use modems a lot back in the day, so whatever, I don't care. I can get my email off it. So I have redundancy. I spent a little bit more money to make redundant systems, so I don't have that many problems. I try to use reliable vendors, not the cheapest ones, because cheapest ones end up being a lot of money if I screw up a whole, sales call or whatever else. And if you have an old laptop that's marginal and flaky and using obsolete software, it's always crashing, buy another laptop. Take it down, spend $100 to, Best Buy has the Geek Squad or whatever it was. They'll fix your stuff. But you don't screw around with it for a week and have a whole week go by for the sake of a couple $100 fee at Best Buy. I mean, it's crazy. Does that answer your question, Jim?
Absolutely.
I mean, if your car breaks, then get a bike. If you don't have a bike, walk. I mean, I have people say, I can't make this appointment. Well, I was 19. I had a job I really wanted, and I didn't have a car. I walked 12 miles there and back to work each way for like 3 months. I figured I was getting a lot of exercise in. I wanted that job. So what else was I going to do, It was a recession. This was about the time of the oil embargo. And in Detroit, the economy's terrible. I mean, I had a chance to get a job. You grab it. Look at how far away it is. You know what I mean? You can end up Lang sod again or whatever. Anybody else got one? But it was a good excuse, by the way, Jim, because I hear that all the time. Oh, this would happen, that happened. So, what does that mean? What? You know, you can't control these outcomes. There's no alternatives, right? How about the bullshit excuse that you don't have nothing to add on to this call? You can't think of another bullshit excuse. What excuse do you have for not coming up with an excuse? What is it? I can't think of anything, Paul? I can't think of it anymore. That sounds pretty good to me. I'll bet you $100 right now if I wanted to, I can come up with another bullshit excuse. All right, here's the bullshit excuse. My wife is going to make me leave the job. She doesn't want me doing this. All right? I can't do this. I have to. What does that mean now? Are you the sole breadwinner? Yes, I have. I'm the one to earn some money. Okay. So she wants you to take a safer job, right, with a salary. Well, yeah. If you take that safer job, what happens? What are you going to make? Well, that's why I left the last one. I was only making 50, 60 grand a year. We weren't really getting by. So in other words, if you go back to where you were, your guaranteed poverty strikes again, right? Whereas you keep on with this. So if you were selling right now, would she be telling you to quit? Well, no, because you can make a lot of money here. Okay. So in other words, she's telling you not to be a loser, not necessarily to quit this job, correct? Do I read this story? Well, yeah. So I'll tell you what. Why don't you quit using these other excuses? Get on the phone and start closing deals. Why don't you miss role play sessions we're offered to you, right? You're waiting for it to be easy. In the meantime, you're one of opportunities timing out because your family can't stay any longer. You should have ran when you had a chance. The first thing I said when you got the job, I said, do what? Work 12, 14-hour days. Do as many calls as you possibly can. Get momentum going now. Your job is to do 100 presentations, each better than the one before, as soon as possible. Does everybody remember me saying that? Who did it? Who made their 100 presentations as fast as possible, doing anything possible to get 2 presentations a day, even if you had to work 18-hour days? Who managed to do that? All right, next part of the question. Who's happy with their situation right now? Who's unhappy with their situation?
I'm not happy with it.
All right, so I'll tell it to you again. Make 100 presentations as fast as you can. You're going to learn, follow, and master the process. You're going to make every presentation a little bit better than the one before. You're going to attend every training session available to you, including role play, which you're going to actively do. You're going to critique yourself mercilessly on every call. You're close to the reality of the situation. You're never going to look back. You're at 100% commitment. Even if you have to work 20 hours a day, you're going to get 100% because then in a month or two, you'll be making a bunch of money. You'll never look back. Or you can kind of hang out and hedge and see how it goes. Now, you've done the latter. How's that working for you? Megan, did I come up with another excuse, yes or no?
You came up with another excuse, Paul.
Well, then, I want my $100. Give me my $100, or I'm going to send people to your house you're not going to want to know. I'm serious. Area code for Detroit is 313. You know what? 313. Yo, Frank, how would you like to go to Oregon? I want you to go to Bend. I want you to bend someone for me, okay? Here's what I think of these excuses. You say you have a dog, you walk across your yard, you step in dog shit, and you're scraping the shit off on a rock. That's what I think of these excuses. That's your visual for today. Anybody ever here step in dog shit and have to scrape it off their shoe, get a little stick and dig it out of little crevices in the bottom of your shoe? Steve, you ever do that?
Just did it yesterday.
Well, then that one time when I was a kid, we had a dog. I ran across barefoot in it, and I stepped in really fresh shit, went between my toes. I could still feel it. Ah! You know what I'm saying? And I mean, through all of my toes on that one foot. You ever do that one?
Somebody's made a business model out of picking up dog shit.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. Here's what I learned from that. It was so kind of like just gross that I decided to always make sure that I'm looking where I'm walking, if there's dogs around. Because it was just very, like, just, it was just the suddenness of it. It was just the shock value of it. Big deal, whatever. You know, you wash your foot off. But it was just like that. You just look down there and go, what is that? I mean, oh, you know, that's what I think of excuses like. Every one of these excuses, that's what I think of it. Now, what am I doing when I'm doing this? Why am I talking about dog shit? That's very simple. It's almost kind of aversion therapy. It's part of like cognitive therapy. I want you to associate very negative, gross things with these excuses and very pleasurable ones when you take responsibility, like the huge success you're going to have because you've mastered this and you're no longer putting forth excuses, but you're going straight down the middle and you're going to achieve your goals and you're going to have great success. That's a positive reinforcement. Any excuse now is the same as dog shit squeezing between your toes. That's what it feels like to you now. Well, the leaves are no good. Oh God, I'm going to scrape that off. My boss is an asshole. More dog shit. Can smell. Now, I want you to smell the dog shit when you say that one. If you ever call me an asshole, not only are you going to have dog shit squirting between your toes, but you're going to smell it too. Okay? You like this visual, you guys? You might say, oh, that guy's pretty unprofessional. No, I'm not. I'm very professional. I know exactly what I'm doing. It's called aversion therapy. Right? And if you've had four kids and changed as many diapers as I did, shit doesn't really bother you anymore. Okay? I wish I had a dollar for every diaper I changed. And how many times you have to clean up when one of them gets sick. So whatever. You can say, puked all over yourself once when you're, you know, that's, you want a negative reinforcer. It negatively reinforces the excuse, which means the excuse tends to go away. And you positively reinforce the behavior you want to do. And you can literally fix yourself, and I could save you the $200 an hour for the psychiatrist or the psychologist, okay? It's just basically what they do. You need to decide that you're not that type of person anymore, that you will not live your life making excuses, that rather than do that, you're going to switch careers or jobs or whatever it takes to put you back in control and live with integrity again. Either you're going to stay here and stop making excuses, or you're going to quit and be in a position where you don't need to make excuses. And if that involves switching careers or moving to another planet, whatever it takes, that's how you should live. You should not live this way. You should not live your life pawning off your responsibility, because here's what you do, in my opinion, when you do that. You literally lose part of yourself. You literally have disassociated with your own soul and your own inner essence. You've literally put a barrier there now, and you can't see yourself anymore. And that's no way to live. And in fact, you're not living anymore. You're dead inside. Because this, you're refusing to be yourself, really. You're refusing to look at reality and what you are. And this is only one slice of what you are. This is not everything you are because you're a salesperson and you made an excuse once. That's just one piece of, one little tiny aspect of what you are. It's a significant one in that you can use this throughout your whole life now. You'll always make excuses. Well, why did you get divorced? Well, you know, my wife did this, this, and well, that's the third time. Why? But, you know, they're just all, you know, women are all bad. You know, it can't possibly be my fault. It's all them. And every one of them, if you interview them, say, well, you know, they all consistently, accurately describe this guy and why the relationship broke up. And yet he has an excuse, and he says, now, how about the fourth and the fifth and the sixth wife? Is it going to be their fault then, too? Why don't we just save yourself some trouble? Why don't you marry the seventh wife now? Steve, you like that one?
Well, I used to have one, why don't you just, you know, find the most miserable person you can find, just buy her a house.
There you go. But if you skip number 4, 5, and 6, right, you can go right to number 7. And hopefully you can get at least 9 or 10 wives in there, all of whom were wrong when you get divorced. Every one of them. Every one of them was wrong. I mean, what happens is it's like integrity. Well, look at it this way. You know, I'm not a murderer. I only killed that one guy. That does not make me a murderer. I don't murder people all the time. And that guy had it coming. Or, you know, I only lied or stole just that once. Once in a while I do it, but I'm basically a real honest guy. I have integrity. No, you don't. So either you have integrity, you don't. Either you're a murderer, you don't, right? You can't be half pregnant, right? Well, I'm pregnant. Well, not really, but you're pregnant or you're not.
Right.
And either you make excuses or you don't. That's it. You either make excuses or you don't. First off, you have to understand what an excuse is. That's what the purpose of some of this training was. Now you have to take that and own this information. You have to evaluate yourself on every point. And other possible excuses or that I might not have talked about, and ask yourself, what's going on here? Is this good for me or bad for me? Is this in my best interest to have this in me or not? Then make a decision and then do something about that decision. You can instantly, this is the beauty of it is, all the excuses, you can eliminate them all at once. This way. All of them. They will all go away at once. It's almost like those failure modes where you can almost fix every one of them at the same time. They're all like different facets of the same diamond. They all look different, but they're all just, you know. Once you decide to have personal responsibility and integrity, once you decide never ever to blame other people, and once you decide that, once you accept yourself as being imperfect but on the road to being better, that you're going to be in charge of your own destiny and master yourself, once you, but you can then not have to have an ego defense if you find you're imperfect, because we're all imperfect, you always will be imperfect, therefore your ego defense will never go away if you demand perfection. But once you understand that, then all you have to say, look, I'm going to stop making excuses. What I'm going to do instead, I'm going to do the inner work necessary to have the discipline and maturity and so on, right? And I'm going to own this. And this gives me something to do. You know, I'll be entertained while I'm working on this. Then all these go away. Does everybody agree with me there?
Yep.
And on that, I bid you farewell. Thank you for attending.